All righty. I'm back, guys. Who's back?
I'm also here.
Hey, Zodwa. You were first.
Hey, Sia.
You are first again. Welcome back. We didn't finish talking this morning because you got cut off. So maybe we're gonna start with you. and then we'll take Irene as well if she's still with us on this second segment. But how has it been so far, Zodwa, since you were sitting there in the background listening to people sharing?
Hey, I'm overwhelmed. Especially because I'm a startup, only still learning and pulling the strings together, you know, putting the puzzles together, still doing my research and only setting off the ground. So it's been overwhelming, but most importantly, it's been very inspiring.
Good. I'm glad it's been inspiring. I guess I understand why someone could be overwhelmed, but that's really not... that's not the plan or the intention, you know. So it's, you know, just honor where you are. Take what is for you where you are, you know, because all these things will come together for you or anybody else at the right time. You know what I mean? So for now... Sure. For now, just be where you are, be present where you are, you know, ask a simple question of what's the most obvious thing that I could be doing where I am, and do just that,
yeah.
It's like walking, you know, it's always one foot in front of the other, you know, a whole group of us could be on our way to Cape Town from Joburg, walking, right? And other people might be in Bloemfontein. We could feel like, oh my God, other people are in Bloemfontein, but we can't do anything about that. And we don't have to do anything about that. All we have to do is put one foot right in front of us. You know, the most obvious thing is just put the next foot and the next one. And the next one, because it's not a race, thank goodness, because it's not a race, it actually doesn't matter where other people are. And in fact, what is good about the fact that other people are ahead is the reassurance it brings that, we will get there. Because everybody started at the same place, but we all started at different times. Some of us have been doing this for almost 20 years. You know, so somebody who's starting today, you know, could be overwhelmed as well to say, oh my God, you have a 20-year head start, you know, or they True. Could feel like, wow, I'm so glad, because it means you've kind of blazed the trail, you've opened up the path, so we'll just follow, you know, don't worry, be inspired, that's good. And then just take the next step. Do the most obvious next step for where you are. That's it. That's all you can do. If you do that, you'll be good. All right?
Yeah, I'm actually glad to be part of the community. I see it's a great space for networking because everybody has a different skill set. Everybody has something to offer. I saw Ash is also in property. Taken my first step there, so at least I know there's someone that I can always go to and ask for advice. Sure. But most importantly, I'm still working, like we spoke previously, I'm still working towards establishing a coffee shop and starting my own perfume brand. So those are still top two that I would like to take off the ground, and by next year this time there should be progress.
Yeah, and there will be. And there will be.
Yeah.
It's always about just taking the most obvious next step. That's it. That's really all there is to it. You know, that's really all there is to it. So thank you. Any questions? We didn't finish talking earlier because you did get cut off. Did you have any question that you wanted that I could answer for you that could be helpful for you after this session that I could answer now?
Though? Okay. I think this is a crazy question, but because of their coffee shop, in terms of locating an ATM in a space where you are, let's just say you are in a little corner and you've got a coffee shop there. Mm-hmm. Do you then go to a bank and say, you guys need to bring a mobile ATM here? How does one go about doing that? I don't know if it's relevant to this workshop, but that's one question I have.
That's an interesting question. I don't know the answer, but why would you want an ATM? I'm just curious.
When you're a startup, uh-huh. you don't always have the equipment there, right? Mm-hmm. So you could have your POS failing and now you don't know how to get payment from your customers. But if there's an ATM located there, at least you know they can always go and withdraw money and make a cash payment.
Right. That's interesting. Okay. I don't know if anyone here has an answer. I don't know if anyone here has an answer. I know Ash did work with banks at some point, but what I can say is my guess is that things like ATMs, there is an analysis that banks would do, because I think it would also depend on how much traffic goes into a particular area, where there's a need, you know, for an ATM, you know, that could serve a lot of people, because the bank wants, obviously, you know, to make money from having such a facility in a particular area. And I think also it depends on how far the nearest ATM is, the nearest branch is. I remember you did say in a little corner somewhere. So I see Evelyn has got her hand up, so she might have an answer for us. But I don't know. It's interesting. I'll see if I can ask some of my contacts within banks. An interesting question. Anyway, thanks, Sandra. But over to you, Evelyn. You've got your hand up. You might be able to help.
Yes. Hi, Zodwa. In the center that I have my postnet, there's about 4 or 5 ATMs from different banks. But I think the times that we live in is really about connectivity. So with load shedding and everything else, it just messes up with our system. So not only do we find that our POS systems, you know, don't work properly, but it's card machine. It's actually also the ATM. Might also not work. We next to Capitec, for example, that Capitec ATM is more offline than online. So it's all of those challenges. So what I've done, and maybe it's not a good advice for a startup, but because I've been there for 7 years, I know most of my customers, I would then either offer that they pay via EFT directly into my bank account, or if it's just a 150 black and white copy or 7 rand, anything within reason, I would say, no, man, when you come next time, you'll pay me. Don't worry too much about it now if you don't have cash, because most of our customers don't have cash on them. So that's how you find your way around all of that. Or another option could be having these Yoco machines connected to your cell phone. And then that could be an option for them to just pay and you write out a manual receipt if they want a receipt, if your POS, and then you capture your sales later on. But then it means that you must have trustworthy staff, because they might not put that sale through the later on, and you lose out on that cash because they can make a sale without capturing it on the system. So it's really trial and error. And I think with the load shedding and all the challenges that we have in South Africa, you have to just try and see what would work. A coffee shop would then depend on you would depend largely on, you know, making that sale, getting that cash in. And a customer might not want to pay EFT for one cup of coffee, for example. So you're going to just have to find your way around it. to see how best. Fortunately, it's not something that you experience every day out of your 30 days, but you're going to have to see what works and build up your customer relations in such a way that you can say, no, I see you here every day. It's fine. You can pay me tomorrow or whatever other day if the POS doesn't work. Or is it okay not to, for you not to get a receipt? Then you take the cash, write it there somewhere manually for you then to capture later on. That's what I can say.
Okay, great. Thank you. I see Irene also says a Yoko machine can work. Ash, my question was that if you've got a coffee shop located in a space, how do you get your mobile ATM from any bank to be next to the coffee shop maybe? And thank you, ladies, for your insights.
I in my time in affordable housing, you know, some of the complexes that you know was owned by the company had a commercial component to it, and then I would liaise with various banks regarding ATMs. So you know, an ATM in isolation, I don't think that is something that really appeals to banks. So if there's some kind of small retail component and there's enough foot traffic going through that center, then one could, you know, liaise with the banks to ask them if they can look at putting an ATM there. And they've got experts, that like a dedicated department that just deals with ATMs, that goes out. Basically, you give them the site details. They do an analysis to see, like, look, is this viable for them? And then, obviously, whoever they would basically structure a deal with the landlord of that building, whereby they would pay that landlord, say, probably about like 10,000, well, at that point in time, it was about 10,000 rand a month per ATM. I would say that it would only work, you know, well, for if you want a physical ATM, there would need to be some kind of small retail center with a couple of shops that would justify putting an ATM there.
All right. Thanks, Ash.
All righty, guys. Great. Thank you. Thanks for that. For your input there. That was a very interesting question, Zodwa. It actually, as I'm listening to the contribution from other people in the group, it actually took me back to when I was starting out in business. That. Sometimes when we plan, because that's where you are right now, you're at that planning phase, you know, so many of these questions come up. What if this? What if that? What if this? And, sorry. And I think some people in the group will tell you, people like Evelyn, who've been in business for many years, you know, when you actually start operating, you will actually realize that some of the things you were worried about, they don't even, you know, happen. You know, they don't even happen. But these are, you know, I just had a moment listening, like I said, thinking back to my early days starting out, you know, because you think about a lot of these things, but when you start operating, you know, you realize that actually, you know, they don't even come into the picture at all. So what do I normally advise people, you know, at the start? Definitely what we are doing here with corporate partnerships is one of the best things anyone can do to help themselves get started, which, you know, as I saw in some of the responses you sent me were from your exercises, Zodwa, some of the things you would like to do corporate partnerships around. So it always helps. You actually came into the right place, you know, for someone. I wish everybody who's starting could become part of something like this and actually learn about corporate partnerships before they make some big decisions, you know, about their new business. The other thing is the email that I sent to my mailing list. I don't always include you guys, by the way, to some of the emails I send to my mailing list to avoid confusion, because I send a lot of emails to people who are not clients, you know, because I want to keep in touch with them so that one day they buy something, right? But I generally don't try to avoid overloading you with emails, even though they are educational emails, interestingly. So in some way, in me trying not to overload you with emails, we probably miss educational opportunities in terms of some of the things I shared. So this week I sent an email where I was just saying to people, you know, we sometimes forget the three things. I didn't really put it like that, but the point was just the three things that as business people, we need to always be mindful of every day. Number one is get a customer. You know, get a customer. You know? Number two, get paid. You know, sounds obvious, right? Sounds simple. But we forget like these basics. Get a customer, get paid, deliver an amazing result. Get a customer, get paid, deliver an amazing result. And I know that new businesses are very guilty of forgetting this, because they are trying to get all the ducks in the row to come across a certain way, to appear a certain way. And we've all done it. I remember back in the day when I was starting, you want to have the right business cards, you want to have brochures, you want to have the right address, you want to have all these things. And once you've spent all the money trying to set up all these things, you know, the new laptop, you always want to have the new laptop, the right machines, the whatever. And then after months and months and months and months of spending money on everything, then you remember, oh, I need a customer. I mean, this might not have been the case with you, Evelyn, because you were part of an established brand when you started. You bought a franchise. So I would imagine you probably were saved from having to go through some of these things that a lot of people who start up from zero with just an idea and their own business without being part of an established system, that they end up finding themselves, the traps that they find themselves falling into. And people forget to just get a customer, you know. So there's something called minimum viable product. You know, when you start a business, you want to ask yourself, what is the most basic minimum requirement that I need to have so that I can get that first customer through the door and get paid today? So anyway, Evelyn, you wanted to say something. So let me hear from you. I saw your mic went, you were unmuted there for a sec. Yeah, what did you want to comment on?
Yeah, I just wanted to say what I have learned really is to hold on to your cash for as long as you can when you start a business. It's obviously a mistake that I've made. I've used up all my cash because I thought I like you rightly said, Sia, I thought that I needed to have this and that and the other, apart from benefiting from, you know, having a franchise. It was a new center at the time. And yes, we have anchor tenants like Pick and Pay and Woolworths and Clicks, but it was brand new, luckily in an affluent area. And so it took a while for, you know, feet to pick up, number one, and number two, for them to actually realize that there's a postnet, because it is not very visible. It's in between. It's a very small shop, and it's in between a restaurant and a bank, which You can walk past without even seeing their shop.
Wow.
Hey. So yeah, yeah. And so it took a while for customers really to realize there's a Postnet, number one, and number two, what we have on offer. And at the time, I remember I wasn't there full time. I had a manager in charge. I was actually teaching in a school at the time. And so it took a lot for me, although it is an established brand, to build that sort of customer base. And right from the start, I said to myself that a Postnet is a Postnet is a Postnet, just like Steers and Steers and Steers everywhere. But what makes a person want to come to my Postnet? What is it going to take for a person to go to your coffee shop, Zodwa? What makes you going to stand out? So my approach is, I understand the struggles that small businesses go through. So I want my Postnet to be the back office support for that small business. Wow. And what I offer in Postnet can easily, I mean, I can run your entire office for you as a small business person. And so that would be my target customer or target market. Yes, the person who comes in for 150 copy is just as important as my corporate customer or my small business customer. But my focus would be to build that relationship with a small business owner. And I've done so over the years, even, you know, and also when they go through difficult times, I could hold space for them and say, look, I've been there. Let's support each other. If you can't pay today, it doesn't mean it's okay if you don't pay me, but I can be more understanding and I can say, okay, let's see how we can assist each other. That's the one thing. So wow. I have this loyal group of people. Number two, the person who comes in for, you know, unemployment really is really so real. So the person who comes in who needs to have a CV typed, for example, to go and find work, she doesn't even have that money. Can I afford to say, let me type it for you in my own spare time, I won't charge you, or only pay this or that and not the full amount? Yes, it doesn't make business sense, but it builds relationships over time, because I have to compete with probably 5 or 6 other Postnets within a 5 to 10 kilometer radius in Midrand. So I believe that's why customers have stayed with me. So to come back to what I said in the beginning, hold on to your cash as long as you can. What do I mean by that? Rather use it sort of as collateral to get a business loan or grant or something like that, to say, okay, if I have 100,000 or 500,000 cash available, don't use all of it. Just put up a fraction of it as collateral. Hold on to your cash for those difficult times, then you have cash. Maybe if your coffee machine breaks or this break or that break or the other, you would have cash to replace it, because that's how you can't not have a coffee machine, for example. I can't not have a printer, for example. So then you find yourself, you don't even have cash to have your machine serviced. So that's one of the costly mistakes that I've learned, to not part with your cash so easily when you start up a business. See how best you can use other people's money to get yourself going.
Wow. Thanks. Wise words. Wise words. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Umin. I'm sure Zodwa is taking notes here, you know, as we reflect on some of our own mistakes at the beginning. Hopefully this helps you, Zodwa. It's easy when you look back now. I mean, for us, you know, some of these things are now obvious, but at the beginning, it's easy to make these mistakes, really, 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 really. Because we think things have to be perfect, you know, a certain way, but actually all you need is a minimum viable product, you know, just that most basic thing to get the customer to come in and buy. And I think another thing from what Evelyn's saying is just the importance of personality. You know, don't try to be as much yourself as you can be. Show your humanity in how you run your business. Let people connect. And I think that has been lost in business for many, many years. Now, I think it's coming back. People are understanding that businesses are actually, it's no longer a B2B or B2C. It's age to age business. Even with what we are doing in corporate partnerships, it's human to human. If we always remember that no matter how big the company you're writing to, it's always about that human connection. It's human to human, you know? So when you start your own business, just connect with people as you, you know? I mean, you guys have seen just in how I interact with you, you know? Over the last 2 years of the pandemic, everything has been virtual. I haven't met most of my clients, I haven't met them face-to-face. We haven't even met most of us here. But we just connected as human beings. We just connected as human beings. And that, you know, is such a big thing in how we do business. So I like that those examples that even used around helping people and all of that. So let your personality come through, because these are things that differentiate us, you know, compared to another business that does the same thing, because then it becomes just a commodity, you know. But one thing that can never be copied or duplicated is who you are and just the caring that you bring, you know, and the warmth that your clients experience from doing business with you. All right. Okay. All right. As we move along, I know that Evelyn had a question that we were going to take on the second segment. So I'll come back to you about that, Evelyn. I wanted to have Irene on the call, but I see a message from her. She's not feeling too good. She's here, but she doesn't have a voice because of flu. So we'll give her a break. We'll just allow her to listen and type. If you have a question, Irene, that you'd like to type, maybe, please feel free to just put it on the chat. I'm not going to get you on the mic because I don't want you to strain yourself. You need all the rest you can get to recover your voice. So I'm not gonna get you on the chat, but if you've got a question, by all means, please do put it on the chat, and then we can tackle that for you. I think, let me just see if there's anyone else we've got here who we haven't had a chance. I don't know if Zodwa, we answered all your questions, but if there's anything else you wanted to ask, particularly around corporate partnerships that we could help you with, by all means, please do let me know. Other than that, I think I'll go back to you, Evelyn. You just to, if I remember correctly, it was around some agreement you are having with the investor of the Free State. There was something you wanted to ask me or you wanted to talk about around that. So I think this is a good opportunity to go back to that.
All right. Thank you, Sia. Yes, what I wanted to know, to talk about is that now we have the MOU in place and it's now implementation of that. So immediately I have training needs, for example, with the primary school that I told you about that I'm working with for the, you know, intervention program to improve their result or performance. So I naturally would then go back to my training partner and say, look, what is there that we can offer? And you would come along. Now it's back and forth and back and forth for weeks. And I thought that in our initial negotiations, which resulted in the signed MOU, that all of those things and my needs and so on have been properly articulated. But then as much as that was done, I think, and properly covered with the people that I engaged with, which led to the or resulted in the signed MOU, I'm now being handed over to their various faculties of offering these courses. And I need to now deal with people who have not been part of the initial negotiations, obviously, and the signing of the MOU. And so I find myself just very frustrated because days go by and in business, you don't have time to dilly-dally because you spend that time in the negotiations.
Right.
And I think I expect for things to just happen because we have concluded the agreement based on the, based on the fact that we have ironed out those things.
Great.
And so it's just been very frustrating. So I, to the point that I just want to just move on and see if I can find another partner or right. do this thing on my own. So how do I just pace myself and get this thing to work, man?
Great. Good question. Indeed, these things do happen. How would I handle a situation like that? So one of the challenges, as you've kind of articulated, is that now you are dealing with people who were not part of the process, like people within those faculties, right? One, they're not part of the process. Two, they probably don't have the full story of who you are, where you fit into the whole thing. Three, they have no incentive to care, you know, about you and your programs. Absolutely. And whatever. They, you know, they have no emotional investment or attachment to any of this. All they know is that they've got jobs to do and they are doing that. And they're like, what is this now? Who's this? You know, they don't have to care. So that's, you know, this is now where the kind of the chain is break, you know, this is the weakest part of the whole chain, you know. So how do I deal with that when something like that happens? So the best way I have found to handle these types of situations with clients I've found that it's always best to have a champion within an organization. So in your case, for instance, one of the people that you've been dealing with at the University of Free State, it would be helpful if one of those people has passion for what you're doing. And you've been dealing with them and they've been open to having this conversation because they genuinely care about you and what you're doing. Because then that person would make a great champion for you. This is the person you go to with your frustrations, you know. And even with them, you don't even express them as frustration, you know. You basically go to them to say, hey, I'm having a challenge, you know, because you want to appeal to their sense of service, not sense of obligation, but sense of service, where they want to help you because they care, you know. So it always helps. So that would be the first thing I would do. I would establish who would be my champion. And then I would go to them. And I would tell them that this is where we are. I'm having a bit of a challenge. I wouldn't use the way I do business, just generally. I don't lean heavily on we have an agreement, we signed this. I don't lean on that at all. What I lean heavily on is the human factor. You know, the part of the reason I'm thinking, and I don't think I've taught this enough, but part of the reason I've been able to get a lot of opportunities that I've gotten with some of the biggest companies is because I appeal very much on the soft side, on the human side. I actually want people to do things for me because they feel good about it. I never pull the agreement card, the MOU, even though all those things are there, but I don't pull those things and say, hey, we've got this agreement. No, 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 no. It's because I know that humans, even with those things in place, if they don't feel inspired to do something, they can still drag their feet. A quick story. There's a book which I think some of you would have read at some point, a book called How to Win Friends and Influence People. We know the book, right? By Dale Carnegie. There's a story in that book that stayed with me forever. It's right at the beginning of the book. So this story, and I'm not going to remember the details, but I'm just going to give you the high level. There's a guy who's a serial killer and a kidnapper. He's like a bad guy, right? So It so happens that on this particular day, he kidnapped people. He's holding people hostage. I think that's the right way of putting it. He's holding people hostage. And they had hostage negotiators outside, the police and all of that. And they're trying to, you know how it is in the movies, right? There's this person who's got all these hostages. They want him to release them and all of that. So in that whole process, how it ended with him killing himself somehow, right? He kills himself. And when they move in, they found a suicide note. And the note that he wrote before he died, basically what he's saying is that I'm a good person. You know, I'm a good person. I'm a nice guy. People have been so unfair to me, right? They've treated me badly. They make me look like a bad guy, you know? Now, if you look at that against the background I just painted of that person, it just doesn't connect. I just like, but this guy, everybody knows that he's bad. He's bad news. But in his own eyes, which is the point of my story, he sees himself a certain way. Now, what does this have to do with everything? What this has to do with everything is that human beings always see themselves in favorable terms. They always see themselves in a good light. Even the people who we feel are unreliable or they haven't honored their end of the bargain, they don't see themselves the way we see them. They see us as being unreasonable when we when we expect certain things from them, or when we complain about them not living up to, you know, their end of the bargain or whatever the case. And so what I took from that story was that just always give people an opportunity to live up to the reputation they have with themselves, you know? So always treat them like they are reasonable. Always treat them like they want to help, like they are somebody who in their heart of hearts, they actually want to do the right thing, right? So give them an opportunity to actually do that. So give them always give them a chance to do the right thing and in a way that makes them feel like it was their idea to be nice, if that makes sense. So in a case like this, I would identify one of the people you've been negotiating with and, you know, go to them with all the frustration that I'm imagining you must be feeling, which I think all of us would be feeling at this point. I would kind of put that behind me and talk and go to this person and say, hey, so-and-so, I need your help. I need your help. As you know, when we started talking, I told you that, you know, we wanted to help, you know, these learners and all of that. And I know part of the reason I've really enjoyed working with you is because I know you really, really want to help these learners. So we've reached that point, you know. But the challenge I'm having is that I'm finding myself having to deal right now with people who don't have that background. You know, I'm dealing with people within your departments who don't have the background story, who probably maybe are missing some information in terms of why this is so important and why this is urgent. And it might be affecting their response times, you know, and their response to my requests. And I think because you and I work together in this, because we are working together in this, I really need your help. You know, because we've made promises to those schools or to those learners and they're expecting things from us. I would really love, and then you spell out exactly what you would like them to do for you. You know, one of those things might be that, would they be the go-to person going forward for anything you want? Because they are there at the university, they know the people in the faculties, in the departments and whatever. Would they mind, you know, working with you, handle, you know, working with you hand in hand. I think that's the phrase I was looking for. Working with you hand in hand, but they are there now. Whenever you need something, you just go to them and then they handle it. And also that when you guys have those conversations, you agree, you give them very clear guidelines as to when you need those things done. If you need them in 3 days, you will communicate with them that within 3 days, within a week, or whatever the case. So have that champion, who really has bought into this, because that's how it got to where it is. Somebody did buy into your vision, whatever it is you presented to them. So bring them back and get them to be your contact person so that they can be the ones to talk to their colleagues so that you're not left in limbo where you have to run around trying to find somebody somewhere. So I hope that's helpful, Evelyn. I mean, I'd love to hear your comment on this, if this sounds feasible from your side.
Perfect. Yeah, thank you. I've just made a comment or thanking you in the chat section to say this is absolutely perfect. I will certainly give it a go and see what comes out of it. Thank you. It's really sound advice.
Do you have someone in mind as I'm talking? Are you beginning to have some kind of a picture of who you could contact?
Yes, absolutely. There's two people who have been instrumental in the negotiations part. One is the administrator. She really just wants to liaise and pass on messages. Mm. She really just doesn't want to become involved.
Oh, sorry. Well, you got muted there for a sec.
Sorry. She really doesn't want to become involved in, it's like making her uncomfortable.
Wow. That's
interesting. Mm-hmm. She just wants to, whenever I raise a concern, she would say, just put it in writing and then I'll be happy to pass it on.
She wants to be safe.
But the other person, person, I think she's quite senior in this section, the outreach, they call themselves the community outreach or something like that. Mm. She's an advocate and she's very much more influential. I think I should then appeal to her and maybe like sort of have a post implementation sort of meeting, just a quick one to say, okay, now that we have signed the agreement, these are the practical implementation things. These are some of the, issues that I have. How can they help me resolve these things?
Yeah.
Perfect points that you've raised. I know also, now how to approach
you. And in that conversation, don't be afraid to also express exactly how you would like them to help you. So that they know what you would like, because sometimes if we don't tell people how they could be helpful to us, sometimes they don't know, also in addition to them saying how they can help, but you could also add that this is what would really 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 be helpful for you.
Because what I could gather from my engagement with the faculties was that they were not well informed as to what this MOU entails and why am I now contacting them?
Yeah.
Because the administrator just sort of connected us, in a short email to say, this is our new sort of community-based partner and she's interested in the short learning programs. You guys talk, and so I then gathered that, okay, all right, that's where the frustration from my side comes from. They were not well informed.
Yeah.
What we've agreed upon in the MOU, and also why am I asking for certain things? Because I would then assume they have been briefed and some are fire away and expecting certain answers.
Right.
But thank you. You've given me some great things to work on.
and awesome. To work with. Well, I'm glad that helps, Evelyn. I think from what you just told me, with these two people, with the senior person and the coordinator person, the way, as I'm looking at it now, what I think might be the best solution is to actually have both of them as your people. I'm okay with the coordinator person not wanting to kind of be making decisions. I think she's uncomfortable. She kind of knows her place within the hierarchy of their department. She doesn't want to be caught up in, you know, in kind of committing the institution or whatever, in whatever you want and all of that. But because she's willing to be the person who's a messenger, she becomes a very useful person to assist the senior person. Because then if she's involved, the senior person who's going to be your go-to person going forward, all she has to do is to instruct the coordinator to do certain things. You know what I mean? So that way she becomes a good pair of hands to get the ball rolling. You know what I mean? And I think with time, you know, when she starts to see this rapport that you have with the senior person, it's also going to be easier for you to also establish a certain way of working. For instance, certain messages that she's going to send, you may want to, let's just say, like this email that she sent where she said, this is another community partner, you guys talk, you know, something like that could have been written slightly better. So as that relationship grows, you might be able to say, hey, before you send that email, can I see it so that maybe I can just make sure that it conveys a clearer message, you know? So you might find that there will be a rhythm that gets established in how you work, but it's very important that the senior person agrees to be the go-to person for you. And then this person, because she's probably busy, that senior person, and then the person who's playing the coordination role then becomes that pair of hands that facilitates and make things happen with her community. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Great stuff. All righty, cool. Thank you. Wow, we've got like 17 minutes before we end our session, guys. I actually think we covered a lot of things today. I don't know about you. Even having this open session today where we were just, you know, sharing and answering questions, I actually think we covered a lot of things. I'm very happy, I must say. Ash is also pleased with that. Thank you, Ash. Is there one last thing that you guys would like maybe us to touch on in the last 15 minutes of our session? I've got nothing that I want to add right now. Because if there's nothing else, I can end the session right here. But if there is something, we do have a little bit of time to squeeze in maybe one last point or answer one last question from anyone, from any of you guys. I think I spoke to confidentiality. Oh, okay, let's talk about that. Yes, Evelyn, please come back. This is another very, very, very good one. Let's talk about confidentiality. Please come back on the mic.
Yes. You know, I am very much open in my discussions, and I realize that I am obviously naming not with the intention to shame,
sure,
but naming the people that I work with and raising the concerns that I have. And I would just want to have that comfort that in this group that we protect each other from the point of view of not sharing, because you might know who I'm talking about. You might know, you know, the world is small and the world is big. And really my raising these concerns come from a good place in searching ways to do things better, right, and learning from you as well.
Right,
and I would want to know that what I share, I'm very much open with sharing. I don't have any, sometimes I don't have filters.
Right.
I just feel that it's just too much pity to try and filter and sensitize what I want to say if I want to say it. So I just want to have that sense of comfort within this group that we are protecting each other and the information that we're sharing, and that it would not be, that we would not inadvertently sort of put each other in the firing line, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a very good
thing.
That's a very important thing you're saying. Let me comment on it. What I've learned over the, almost like that example that I gave about that that guy who was holding people hostage, what I've learned is that it's always about the spirit, you know, in which we do things. You know, when we enter into agreements, I've had in the past, I've had, you know, written tight contracts and agreements and all sorts of things with people. But what I've learned about humans is that if people don't have good intentions, no matter what is written on paper, they will always find a way to breach those things. So what did that teach me? What that taught me is then the importance of the person, the who, you know. So for me, when I do business, first and foremost, it's the who. I use a lot of my, which is not a very business thing to do, by the way, but I use a lot of my gut feel about people, in addition to, you know, the crossing T's, dotting I's, the T's and C's and the signatures and all of that. So as I'm inviting people into a group like this, not only do we have a relationship in us getting together, like this is what this platform, these workshops are the only kind of times where we kind of get together as a group, but all of you, I have a one-on-one relationship with you. And from that point of view, because all of you have the same concerns, which is possibly a good thing, because everybody here has something that is dear and special to them that they're working on. And you guys talk to me privately about some of these things. And all of you, including me, in fact, because some of the stuff I'm sharing, everything I'm sharing here with you is confidential. I wish you wouldn't share it with anybody who hasn't paid for it. I think about that all, everything I'm teaching, I don't want people to take it and go teach it, you know? So all of us, we all have this exposure to each other. And I'm thinking there's something good about that to some extent, the fact that all of us have something we wish to protect. And I'm glad you brought this up, Evelyn, because as much as we do have that understanding of, you know, of confidentiality, but I think going forward, it's important just to always be reminding one another about it. I'm not worried with the group that I have, including people who are not here. I'm actually not worried about, you know, any of you and anything that we shared being, you know, used to put you in jeopardy. So I don't have that concern. And I'm speaking for everybody, including people who are not here. But I do think, because sometimes when we don't talk about things and constantly sensitize one another about the importance of certain things, I don't want to say those things can be forgotten. I don't think they would be, but I believe that it's important. And I think that should be, that's something that I'm probably going forward, I'm going to go a little bit out of my way to keep just emphasizing, because I think it protects all of us here. Because I do want this, as you say, I do want this to be the space where we can support each other, you know, in especially when we understand who's working on what. So good point. But as things stand, you know, Ash says, this is a safe space. And I agree. You know, I've done these now for a while and we've never had a situation where people breached and, you know, went behind somebody's back and all of that. And I think a big part of it is who I choose to have here. You know, there are many people who reach out to me wanting to be in this, you know, and there are people that I turn away, you know, with money in hand, ready to pay, you know, but if I feel, you know, that I don't think this person would be a good fit, I would, in a very nice and kind way, I would turn them away. So, you know, even how we got to be together here, even the deal that we have, I mean, how you guys, you know, are paying me, you know, it's based on complete good faith, and in complete trust that we have in each other. So I'm happy with this point that you brought up, Evelyn. More than anything, I think to me, it just gave me an idea that we actually need to talk about it a lot more going forward, just to keep reminding and keep emphasizing it. Not because there's a need for that, but just so that, you know, we always put it front and center, you know, to create comfort for all of us here. But as things stand, I don't have any worries with the people who are here, because all of us have something to lose. You know, we are opening ourselves. I mean, I'm thinking about Webster earlier, you know, when he was just sharing about his deals, he named the company and all of that stuff, you know. So it's just in that good faith. And of course, should it happen that, you know, somebody does something malicious, depending on what it is, I may be forced to take some steps, and they may be legal, you know. So there are remedies to things when people act maliciously against other people. Not only would probably that person be removed from working with me and removed from our group, but I may consult my lawyers and you know, take whatever necessary steps, you know, that may be appropriate at the time. So, but at this stage, I'm not foreseeing any of the, I don't have such concerns, but we wouldn't stop if something like that happens. Anyway, thank you guys. I hope, thanks Evelyn. I see your message over there. Yeah, good point. And thank you guys. If there's anything else, either on this very point or on something else before we close that you want to touch on before we close, this would be an opportunity to do that. Alrighty, guys. It's been fun hanging out with you. I only say 3 hours. At first, it feels like such a long time until we come here and we share all, we have these discussions, and you realize that, wow, it was, you know, it was actually quite, it was short, you know, because of the high level of discussion that actually takes place at these workshops. Anyway, guys, thank you very much. Have a good weekend. I still have another session later today. You're more than welcome to join, by the way. But I don't want to take your whole Saturday, so please don't feel obligated. you know, I'll give my Saturday to people, but you probably have other things to do. So I'll be back at 3 p.m. with another group, and we'll just be talking about, you know, premium clients and building cash reserves during a tough economy. You know, nothing exciting, you know. Okay, guys, thank you. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for being here and sticking around till the end. We shall touch base. You've got my, you know what you need to do. If you need any help from me, just drop me a WhatsApp and I'll be more than happy to get back to you. By the way, let me say this. I know after you sent me recording voice notes, you know, it's for some reason, it's something that I'm learning to be. It's not my most natural way of communicating. so sorry, but I'm always easy with text, but I know that sometimes you want to tell a story. So don't, I know that I haven't responded to some of those voice notes of yours, and I will. It's just that it's not the most natural way. It's easy for me to just see text, read words and type back, but voice notes, I need to come back, listen to this track. So I will be getting back to you. Keep sending those. I'm going to learn. I need to improve. I'm not going to hold on to that limitation. I want to improve and be versatile in how I communicate. So do send those and I will listen. But I'm, like I said, the most natural way for me is always text. But sometimes these things are long. Like the message I sent you guys this week, I could have sent you an email, but I was like, man, there's a lot I want to say. Let me just record. It ended up being 30 minutes. So yeah, so there is a place for recordings for sure, or recorded messages. Anyway, guys, keep working. I hope you're inspired after today, and I hope the answers we gave will move you one step forward in the direction that you want to go. That's why we do these things, is to really just keep each other, you know, this is like a reset button that we've put in place for ourselves, so that sometimes when we need a little pickup, we get together and we lift each other up and give each other the renewed energy to continue. So I hope this session was that for you. And, you know, love to see who we're going to become a year from now, you know, because if we keep doing this, if we keep working, we're going to be a different person next year, I promise you. All right. Anyway, guys, thank you. Have a good Saturday and have a great week ahead. Talk to you soon. I'll be sending you more training into your inboxes. Take care now. Cheers. Bye-bye.